Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the Ahern Hotel in Las Vegas. On the broadcast today, the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Steve Yeager, joins us for the whole show on an all-new Nevada News.
Hit the open road with a truckload of cash free play in one of three luxury travel trailers during the $250,000 travel time giveaways. Thousands in weekly giveaways plus $7,500 in grand prizes guaranteed. And a new travel trailer or $35,000. Now at the Carson Valley Inn.
As you know, Reno is booming. Toll's development company is helping it grow with insightful design and development, building community with every project, adding beauty, adding excitement, emphasizing our shared humanity. Reno is becoming bigger. Toll's development is helping it become better, more livable, more enjoyable. To learn more, go to tollsdevelopment.com. tollsdevelopment.com.
Story County is leading Nevada. Home of the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Google, Tesla, Panasonic, and other world-leading companies. Story County provides thousands of tech, advanced manufacturing, and logistics careers for Nevadans. We're diversifying and driving Nevada's economy and generating millions in tax revenue and billions in economic activity across northern Nevada. Story County is leading Nevada's future.
Retail's impact on Nevada's economy? Enormous. 8,600 businesses, large and small, employing 145,000 workers. And last fiscal year, retail paid tax on nearly $60 billion in sales. We're the Retail Association of Nevada. We support retail. We help it grow. And we mean business.
RANNV.org. Save money and take transit. Did you know you can ride the bus all day for less than what it would cost you for a gallon of gas? Plan your trip now by going to rtcwashoe.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always delighted to welcome back to the program the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Steve Yeager. Thank you so much for doing this.
Always a pleasure to be here, Sam. Good to see you.
Well, I know how busy you are, so I really do appreciate it. Let's talk about education funding. Nevada was able to put a ton of money, over $2 billion into education in the last session. I know that you're looking, because I was looking at your campaign website, to put more money into education. My question is, how do you track how much money has already been put in? I know that you don't want to see test results-based education, but how do you track to make sure Nevadans know that that money was well spent?
Yeah, so I think the 2023 session really was an indicator to Nevada as a whole that we are not giving up on public education. Some want us to give up. We're not doing that. We were in a great situation to be able to put $2.2 billion into education and an additional $250 million for teacher and support staff pay raises. But here's the important part. It wasn't just about the money. It was also about exactly your question. How do we show that that money is actually working? And I think in addition to the money, we put in some accountability and transparency measures. Now, those are big fancy words, right? What does that really mean? What that means is the legislature is actually mandated now between legislative sessions to bring the school district superintendents in front of them and ask that exact question. What are you doing with the money? What are your plans? Can you show progress? And in addition to that, our legislative auditors are going to be doing performance audits of the school district. So that's not just, are you using the money wisely? Is it not being misspent? That's, are you getting results? Are you getting performance out of that money? So obviously this is going to take some time. Nobody thinks we're going to turn things around immediately. I do think we were able to put way more money in education than we ever thought we'd be able to
incredible.
Last session. And, you know, the Commission on School Funding is a group that sort of looks at where we sit in the rankings in the country. They are coming out with a new report, I believe, in July to sort of update those rankings. Because we put Nevada had the highest percentage increase of any state in the country in education funding. But other states also invested more money,
right.
So we'll have to see where those rankings fit. But they're going to have a 10-year plan to get us to the national average as well. And that Commission on School Funding is also going to look at recommendations for programming, how that money should be spent. Because I think, you know, that was a real black hole for us as the legislature. We didn't really know. We give the money to the Department of Education here in Nevada. They give it to the school districts. And then we go to doors and we talk to constituents and we hear complaints about the district. And this is an opportunity for us to actually figure out, how are you spending the money? What is the plan? It's different in every district, including the Charter School Authority. They're going to come in front of us, too, to talk about how they're spending the money. But I think we've had that 1-2 punch of saying funding, yes, we need more funding, but we also need some way of tracking this. And the legislature has a role to play in that, and so does the governor and the executive branch through the Department of Education. They're instituting some accountability measures as well. So I think that's going to help us really figure out that the money is being spent wisely and doing what it should be doing, which is increasing student outcomes all throughout the school districts.
All right, so you're looking at a 10-year plan to get to the national average. What is that going to cost? Because, you know, I mean, I remember when I first started Nevada Newsmakers 20-odd years ago, $1 billion for higher ed and $1 billion for K-12 was huge. I mean, that was the entire budget. Here we are with putting in, like you said, $2.2 billion plus into this last cycle. How much more do you estimate that we need to put in to get to your goal?
We shall see. So the initial report from the initial report from the Commission on School Funding, which came out a couple years back, they had a 10-year plan. And when you discounted that future money for current day money, the investment that would have been needed in the 23 session that we just got done with was somewhere about $3.5 billion. So we actually funded 2/3 of that, right? But they're going back to look because obviously with inflationary concerns, with cost of doing business with other states, and that was a plan to get us to the national average. Well, the national average is a moving target as well,
sure, right?
So I think that's why we're excited to see this updated model come from the Commission on School Funding. I don't know how much it's going to be. I do know that, at least for my colleagues, and I think for the governor as well, there is a pressing sense of, we've got to at least get to the national average. You hear all the time, you're just throwing good money after bad, you're throwing money at the problem. We've never done that in education in Nevada. We've never been anywhere close to the national average. So the Commission on School Funding will help with that, look at all the other states. And so I'm not sure what that amount's going to be, but I think we owe it to our students, to our families, to at least get us to the national average, because until we get there, I don't know how we really rate ourselves against other schools where there's just more funding. So it's going to be a challenge, obviously, but I think coming out of last session, you see that this really is a priority of this legislature, and it was one of the places where we were really able to partner with the governor to increase this funding. Now, I will say, confusing to me, every Republican in the legislature voted against the school funding bill. That doesn't make any sense to me, but thankfully, the governor looked at that and was able to say, I think this is an important investment, and so we'll continue trying to make strides in that field. But I'm really looking forward to that report, which I think comes out in June or July.
Okay, so all of that said, you look at what's happening with the Clark County School District, you read the papers the same way I do. Does your hair get on fire when you read about the craziness?
Certainly in the past, yes. I was not shy in coming out and calling for Dr. Jara to resign. I didn't think he was the right person to lead the school district. Nothing personal against him. But I just didn't like the direction that the school district was going. And I heard it all the time when I talked to voters, frustration with the school district. So they're in a time of transformation for sure. So we'll see what that process looks like to bring in a new leadership team. I do think at the legislature we had a very significant bill that maybe is a little bit overlooked, but we added 4 additional members to the Clark County Board of Trustees, which oversees the school district, and those are 4 appointed members instead of being elected. At this point, they're non-voting, but they get appointed by their biggest municipalities, Clark County, City of Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and Henderson. And I think those 4 appointees have really brought something special to that board because they're asking hard questions that I think some of the elected trustees have not been willing to ask in the past. So I think we're going in the right direction there. We're obviously look at that model to figure out in the future, should those be voting members? Should we further change that board? But keep in mind, the Board of Trustees is managing a multi-billion dollar corporation, and we really don't have any qualifications in statute to run for that job. So I think that's going to help, but certainly, bringing new leadership into the Clark County School District, and in addition, the Washoe County School District, they just hired a new superintendent as well. But I think, being able to reset that relationship with the legislature so we talk about what our expectations are, I think that's going to be beneficial moving forward. I understand the frustrations. I'm as frustrated as anybody. But I think the legislature really is laser focused on this issue right now to say we only have a little bit of time to get this right. We can't just keep doing what we're doing. So we do expect performance. And if we don't get that kind of performance, then I think we'll be looking at, you know, potential other steps for the school district and what should the state involvement be.
Okay, so it's the fifth, Clark County is the fifth largest school district in the country. Mayor Michelle Romero of Henderson was on the program a couple of days ago, and she was talking about that they would like to break away from the Clark County School District. Mm-hmm. Do you have any support for the idea of other municipalities breaking away from Clark County to make it smaller districts?
Yeah, I was asked this question at a Leadership Las Vegas panel that I did. It was the first question from the audience, should we break up the school district? And my answer then is the same as it is now, perhaps. And I only say that
really?
Because...
That's actually quite a step.
Yeah, I mean, it's an idea that's been out there, right? Actually, my predecessor in Assembly District 9, David Gardner, was the first sponsor of the bill to kind of break up the school district, which ended up being a decentralization model. I don't know that it had the impact people thought it would, but I guess here's what I'll say. I think that idea is worth consideration. It's complicated. There's some equity issues about how would you break up the school district and still make sure that we don't have really affluent areas
right.
and less affluent areas. Those are real concerns, and those are hard to figure out. But I think we ought to be looking at that, but also realize that we just made a big step forward in the last legislative session. And as I said earlier, like that's not going to turn things around tomorrow, but we expect to see results. So I would look at that idea of breaking up the school district as sort of on the back burner right now. You know, that's on simmer, but let's sort of see what happens with the investments that we're making. And if we can turn things around and when we start getting improvement, then maybe that conversation is taken off the table. But I definitely think it's worthy of consideration. It's just what I don't want to do is create multiple mini school districts with more bureaucracy that are harder to manage and where we have some that perform really well and some that don't. But I understand the frustration. I've talked to the mayor about that. I know where she's coming from, and I've just asked for a little bit of patience as we as a legislature try to move forward and figure this thing out.
Last thing on education is, were you as disappointed as I was, and I was disappointed, that schools across the country, both K through 12 and higher ed, was so unprepared to deal with a COVID situation where those kids lost so much time?
Yeah, it's been really frustrating. And, you know, I think it's hard to, in some ways, it's hard to go back to 2020 and put ourselves in that mindset, because I think, you know, the mindset really was we have to protect people and save lives. And that's obviously a worthy goal. But I don't know that we really realize the impact that would have on students, right? And when you say they were unprepared, it wasn't just the schools. Everybody was unprepared,
true.
Right? Talking about having to move to, I mean, I had never really done video conferencing in my life. And when the pandemic happened, I thought, well, I'll learn this for a week or two. And, you know, here we are years later when we're still on Zoom and that sort of technology. But I think it speaks to the notion that, like, we've got to be prepared if something happens in the future. I think we're better situated now. But the data we've been getting, particularly from the school districts here, is just the learning loss is real, and it's going to take years for us to recoup that. And so understand that frustration. And, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine who's a parent, and she was noticing that in one of her children who, you know, was in kindergarten at the time the pandemic happened, that they're just having to do a lot of makeup, a lot of tutoring. Some of that we've done through funding at the legislature. You know, we've instituted literacy grants to be
right.
able to give out to schools. So we're trying to come up with that. But yeah, I think the whole world as a whole was really, really unprepared. And I do think it's hard for us to go back and put ourselves in that mindset, right? It seems like such a long time ago, but it was only 4 years ago.
Right.
4 years ago today, we were in the midst of the pandemic. And so we've got a lot of progress to make, not just in the school districts, but I think in society as a whole, because the pandemic really did unleash, I think, some real ills and ill feelings in society.
And I'm not saying this from a political point of view, but the truth of the matter is that George W. Bush did warn that something like this was potentially going to happen. And yet, we really did nothing to prepare for it. So
yeah, I it's frustrating, and you know, I think as a human being, you sort of get it. You never really think the worst thing is going to happen, even when people predict it. But you know, hopefully, we're not going to be in that situation again. I think every other state, the country, particularly Nevada, has updated all those emergency protocols. So you know, pray to God we're never in that situation. But if we are, I think we'll be much, much better prepared.
I couldn't agree with you more. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Steve Yeager, after this timeout.
Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. ProGroup Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. ProGroup Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Welcome to the Winnemucca Big R.
Hi, I'm John Walker. Welcome to Big R Lovelock.
Hi, I'm Rich Martin. Welcome to Fallon Big R.
My name is Braden. Welcome to Big R Fernley.
Hi, I'm Kelly. Welcome to Big R Sparks.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're speaking with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Steve Yeager. One of the things that is on your website is affordable child care. And I couldn't agree with you more. It just doesn't make any sense. I've said it on the program 100 times that somebody's making $20 an hour and they're paying $20 an hour for child care for one kid. So what's, in your opinion, is Nevada's government's role in affordable child care?
I think the government does have a role in that. I mean, it's really important. As you say, if it doesn't make sense economically for the person, they're just not going to do it. They're going to stay home.
And we need the labor force. That's the really big issue.
We do need the labor force. And to the extent we want people to move up in the labor force and make additional money, you know, they've got to be in the labor force or they've got to upskill, and that takes time, and you're not going to do that without child care. So, you know, I think during the pandemic, we had some money from the federal funds to be able to do subsidies for child care. Some of that is going to be ongoing in the state. But I also think we need to think a little bit outside the box on this, right? There are a lot of models out there, not just in the country, but in the world at large, where private businesses actually offer childcare on site. And maybe that's through a tax credit program because, you know, obviously, like, they need to make sure it's not a money loser for them. But it's an all-hands-on-deck sort of scenario for us, and I was just stunned to sort of hear how expensive childcare was. I mean, you know it in your mind, but when you start to pencil it out, it just doesn't make sense. So, you know, I believe the state has a role to play in that. We need to build more capacity as well. We need to make sure, you know, people can get licensed to actually be in these facilities. Some of those are barriers as well. I mean, it's not just affordable childcare, but it's adequate childcare. If there aren't enough spots, then that's another issue. So,
well, also, you're an attorney. The liability issue for corporations has got to be one to think about too. What's the insurance costs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those are all important things, but you know, I think from a company's perspective, right? I mean, to the extent you have a really good employee, you don't want them to leave because they can't afford childcare. So there's got to be a bit of a partnership there as well. But the state certainly, I think, can grant out money, can look at potentially tax breaks for companies that want to offer childcare on site because it has to be affordable, it has to be convenient, and there have to be enough spots.
Let's talk about another issue that I know is very important too, which is mental health. And you know, you refer to it in terms of you know, police and fire, but it's obviously a much bigger issue. And the trouble for me, and I've been talking about this for over 40 years, is that mental health is such a broad issue. How do you hone in on what are the areas, and where do we get the professionals from? Because we already have a limited capacity in every area of medicine.
Yeah, really good question and really an existential question. And you know, if the pandemic taught us anything, I think it was it took some of that stigma away from the conversation about mental health. But I'm not saying anything new. We don't have the capacity here. We don't have the facilities. And that's really sad, right? Because when someone is ready for treatment, whether they're in crisis and they need to be taken somewhere right away, or whether they come to that realization that I think I need to see a professional, we need to have an open door. We need to be able to help them right away because you might lose that chance. So in terms of what the state's doing, I think you're going to see a lot of emphasis in the next legislative session on mental health, and that's both building out infrastructure in the state and the counties. And by the way, the counties and local governments have a role to play in this as well. It's not just the state. But also looking at some of those licensing issues, trying to build the pipeline for professionals. And some of that includes telehealth, right? The pandemic taught us we can do some things over technology.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not going to work for everybody. Sometimes people just want to be in a room together. But when you're in an emergency situation, to be able to tap into an iPad or a computer and actually speak with a mental health professional. And that includes making that available for law enforcement or firefighters who are on the scene and dealing with someone in a mental health crisis, to be able to remotely bring in a professional. So, you know, it's going to take money for sure. But I think it's also going to take all of us as a community to realize, like, this has to be our priority for us. And some of that's reimbursement rates, some of that's federal government. But I think we're finally starting to have this conversation in a very real way that we can't continue on the path that we're on. We just can't, especially for our youth, because the pandemic and the lack of being in school really aggravated a lot of those mental health issues in our kids.
And I think that this potentially is one area where you could really work with the governor, because when he was sheriff of Clark County, he set up a split between people calling 911 that if it was a police emergency, they got to deal with the police. It was a mental health emergency, they were shifted over to mental health professionals. And I thought that was an incredibly smart thing, because both with police and fire and teachers, we're asking them to do so many other jobs that really are not their responsibility. They need to be doing their jobs, not dealing with mental health.
It's an area we certainly agree that we need to do better on. I think it's a bipartisan area. So we'll talk about that. The one thing I do want to say, though, is the mental health piece, particularly of people with really long-term mental illness, the housing piece is really important. And so that's one we haven't quite figured out with the governor. I don't think we necessarily see eye to eye on housing policy. But to your point, it's not enough just to provide treatment. Like, you've got to have everything included in that. You've got to have housing. You've got to have jobs, stability. And so we'll continue to work on that. But the governor has said mental health is a priority. It's certainly a priority of ours. And I think that's an area we can work together.
All right, let's take another break. More back with the Speaker of the Assembly after this time out.
What do you count on? You count on your power every day. At NV Energy, we've always powered what's important to you. But we're not looking at the past. We're focused on the future. While our standards are high, our rates will remain low. And our commitment to renewables isn't just meeting standards, but leading the way. Because you can count on more than just your power. You can count on the company who brings it to you. That's our promise. You can count on it.
The Nevada Builders Alliance has been protecting the interests of the construction industry for over 50 years. Our programs save members thousands of dollars every year and allow them to provide much-needed benefits to their employees. Our industry also allows Nevada to grow. If you're thinking about a career in the construction industry, reach out. And if you haven't thought of a career in construction, what are you waiting for? We are the Nevada Builders Alliance.
Turn your clunker into a caddy during the Cadillac and Cash giveaways at Tamarack Casino. Weekly cash drawings including $5,000 cash and one top prize of $10,000. Win the grand prize of a Cadillac CT4 or $40,000 in cash. Your good times are at Tamarack Casino.
Calamity. It lurks around every corner. Or not. That's why UMC Quick Care is around every corner with locations around the valley. UMC Quick Care. For all your small calamities.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers with the Speaker of the Nevada Assembly, Steve Yeager. So the controversy in Northern Nevada, and a lot of people are upset from the Secretary of State on down, is that the mail is going to be shifted from being distributed in Reno to being shipped to Sacramento, then brought back to Reno. And my thought is, and this is a lot of people's concern, is about election time and what's going to happen. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I share the concerns of our two U.S. senators and the governor as well.
Secretary of State.
It makes no sense to me that would take the mail from Reno, send it to Sacramento, and come back to Reno. I mean, it's nonsensical. Certainly have concerns about how that might impact the timing of elections. I mean, I guess we'll have to see when we get closer if that decision really is going to stand. Then, you know, perhaps the guidance to voters will be different.
And it's this particular cycle, it's going to be after the election, so it won't be this cycle we have to deal with. Now, they're talking about a saving of about $3 million. Is that something that Nevada can look at and say, okay, if it's $3 million, we'll put up the $3 million?
Yeah, $3 million in the federal government budget is a, as Maggie Carlton would say, that's budget dust.
Right.
So it doesn't seem to me to be something that would warrant doing that. But yeah, we'll continue to look at that. I mean, it's nonsensical, and that decision should be reversed.
Okay, you got 15 seconds to explain to the lobbyists how their coffee lounge is not going to be taken away.
So there's renovation going on at the new legislative building up in Carson City. There's renovation going on the front of the building. There's going to be a cafe on the second floor. So that cafe that used to be there and went away is coming back. And I think that should be open by session. And I think we'll have a really great experience, place, sit down, have some food, and have some coffee in the building.
Mr. Speaker, I so appreciate you being here. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you in Carson City.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And we'll be right back.
Imagine a magical garden that feeds Carson City's hungry and homeless, teaches our high school students agriculture, creates hanging floral displays to beautify downtown, and yet charges nothing. It's not magic. It's the Greenhouse Project. It's real, it's growing, and it needs your help. Go online to carsoncitygreenhouse.org so together we can grow it forward.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take an Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
Snorkel personnel lifts are engineered beyond the industry norm to an uncommon level of safety and durability, and with an eye towards sustainability. They're also designed to be simple to operate and maintain. Snorkel, always at the cutting edge of progress.
Southwest Specialties has been making the homes and businesses of Nevada beautiful for more than 20 years. Their experienced designers and craftsmen create the walkways, backyards, water features, and a variety of outdoor cooking areas that add curb appeal and value to your investment. Call today or visit them at their website and see how they can make your outdoor spaces special. Southwest Specialties, creative, distinctive, beautiful.
Modern boutique Ahern Hotel and Event Center sits at the heart of the Las Vegas Strip. Two floors of meeting and event space are ideal for groups and conventions. Stay in one of 200 luxurious rooms and suites. Brand your event throughout the property. Flexible event spaces make for easy planning and personalization. Take over the entire hotel with a full buyout option.
Thanks for watching Nevada Newsmakers, coming to you from the Ahern Hotel in Las Vegas. As always, you can watch Nevada Newsmakers 24 hours a day at NevadaNewsmakers.com. You can also download podcasts of the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you on the next broadcast. Thanks for watching. We'll see you.